You're listening to Houston's First Baptist Church. For more information, visit us online at houstonsfirst.org. Houston's First Baptist Church, a relevant biblical community. Here's Greg Mott.
Last week we started talking through Genesis. We're in a year-long study of Genesis. And in this, we began talking about creation. Last week was creation for the heart, that the God who creates is also the God who fills. That he created in days 1, 2, 3, and he filled in days 4, 5, and 6, and he created us, and he could fill us, and our hearts are warmed, knowing that God can fill us because he is the creator. And we tried last week to basically set the stage, to get it ready, to get the behind-the-scenes look at creation, to understand what God's doing as he takes it forward, to see the behind-the-scenes of what he's doing. So I want you to look in Genesis chapter 1, as we're going to jump in, and we're just going to kind of use these verses as a backdrop, and then we're going to go with a little bit of science. We're going to kind of see some of the creation for the head, some creation for the head to understand what it is that we don't have to check our minds at the door, but understand the creation for the head and to see what God has. So let's look in Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 through 5. This is what it says. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And now the earth was formless and empty, and darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light." And there was light. And God saw that the light was good, and he separated light from darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And there was morning and evening on the first day. With this thought of Genesis 1:1 in the backdrop, us thinking for creation of the head, for the head, I want us to look at this video clip, to see this clip from a movie called Expelled. It's a great movie. You ought to rent it. You ought to watch it and see it. It's a great movie. And to watch this video clip of understanding how worldview and science and how religion and science can work together. Let's watch this clip.
People who tell you, for example, that science tells you all you need to know about the world, or that science tells you that religion is all wrong, or science tells you there is no God, those people aren't telling you scientific things. They are saying metaphysical things, and they have to defend their positions for metaphysical reasons.
What is being presented to the public is, first comes the science, and then comes the worldview. I would want to argue that that may not be the case, that it may actually be the other way around, that the worldview comes first and is influencing the interpretation of science.
My deep regret is some people are so deeply entrenched in their own worldviews, that they will simply not countenance alternatives.
I'm actually a person of the left, and not even a particularly religious person. I think of myself as kind of humanist. And I think it's sending a very bad message to religious people who are interested in science, that in some sense, in order to do science credibly, they have to leave their religious beliefs at the door.
The founders of early modern science, Sir Isaac Newton, Robert Boyle, Johannes Kepler, Galileo, most of these early scientists all not only believed in God, but they thought their belief in God actually made it easier to do science.
You can be religiously motivated and you can do good science. And they have more often gone together than not gone together.
Admitting our biases is the best way towards rational discussion, which I would welcome.
Do we have to check our minds at the door? Do we say, now we're Christians, so we're going to check our minds at the door, and we're just going to leave it over here, and we're going to blindly believe? Or is there some validity to this book? Is there validity to Christ? Is there validity to believing that creation happened from design? It didn't happen by chance. As we look into this, these notes, I want you to grab your listening guide and make sure you got that, because we're going to answer two questions. We're going to ask two questions. We're going to ask the question, how do we come up with these differences and these thoughts about the age of the earth? That's a stumbling block for us. We go to the museum and we look and they say, well, this was 3 billion years old and this was 4 billion years old. And then we come and we look in our Bibles and we say, well, how is this? Somebody else is saying this is just a few thousand years old. How do we bring these two things together? We're going to look at 5 theories of creation to understand these views of creation. The second thing that we're going to ask is creation, in looking at it, is there an element of design? Is there something that says there was a designer? Or is it just something we could say, no, it makes sense. Chance, it just happened. It was chance that happened over time. Or is there some aspect of design? The age of the earth and the designer chance, that's a place where we end up with a little bit of a battlefield. And so we can look and say, let's set the stage. Let's get backstage and let's look for a minute and try to understand these things. Now, the most difficult part of preparing this message is not getting all the facts. The hardest thing was getting the facts down to where you could get it in 30 minutes. Because there was stacks of books on my desk. I left with a headache, literally 2 or 3 days this week, of creation for the head. I had a headache. It created a headache. But to be able to bring it down, so I'm not going to cover every little thing that we could ever cover, but we're going to be able to have a survey and to look, overview of, to say, is this thing with the age of the earth, how do we look at that? And then is there design and is there chance? So don't check your brains at the door. I'm not going to fly over you. Don't worry. This won't be a message where you just go, well, he's smarter than me. I'll believe him. You're going to be able to look and to see this as well, because creation and evolution both require faith. Creation and evolution both require faith. And I submit to you, I do not have enough faith to be an atheist. I do not have enough faith to be an atheist. And as we look through this, we will see that it requires more faith to believe these things just happened than to believe that God said in the beginning, let there be light. So how do you get this earth? What's the deal on that? Let's look in our listing guides and let's just jump in and let's ask this question about the age of the earth. The first thing that we could say is atheistic evolution. Time and chance produce life and order. Time and chance produce life and order. Atheistic, A meaning without, theistic meaning God, A without God, theistic, without God, time and chance produce order. Hurricanes put roofs on buildings. Explosions create computers and jet planes. Alphabet soup, if you put a fan on it, it will spell a sentence over a quarter amount of time. Chance and disorder brings order. You can have calamity, and calamity brings order. Atheistic evolution. Can it happen without God? Do time and chance produce life and order? Just my question that I have is, if that can happen, why can't we get back in the laboratory and come up with all the things we have and produce life? We can't do it. Can't be done. They've been trying to do it for a long, long time. Can't be done. Without God, time and chance. Now, we as believers in Christ, we should believe, I believe that this is true, microevolution is different than macroevolution. Microevolution is the change within species. We can see that species within species change. That's microevolution. People get taller, people change, different animal groups, they change within the animal groups, within the species. Macroevolution is that there's change between species. You see the difference? Microevolution is change within species. Macroevolution is change outside of species from one species to another. That is vastly different. Atheistic evolution states that without God, time and chance produces life and order. The second thing that you end up with is theistic evolution. Theistic evolution. Now, this is God is the cause and guide of evolution. God is the cause and guide of evolution. This is a very popular thought in today's culture. Very popular for this reason. You have to remember that America is the land of the group hug. We created it. We come up with ropes course and all those things that are wonderful. And at the end, we all group hug together and say, you did swell. It's awesome. Don't use a red pen when you grade the papers, teacher. That might hurt somebody's feelings if they get something wrong. We want to get everybody together for one big group hug. And in the United States, we will choose unity over truth. So theistic evolution is an attempt to combine God and religion with science. Now, there's some problems with this. There's some problems with this, but it's very, very popular. To show you the popularity, I was on a plane recently and I was reading my USA Today and I got to the section that had this editorial section and had the typical evolutionary thing we've all seen a million times. A monkey gets taller and taller and taller and taller until finally he's a man and there it walks out, further on to go. Now, there's no transitionary fossils that show any of that, but it's a nice picture that shows this. So you've got this monkey picture, so I'm reading, and it's basically an article about theistic evolution. The man next to me begins to read over my shoulder, as people do on planes, and so I kind of went, buy your own paper, And I thought, well, maybe this is a witnessing opportunity. The Lord wants me to share my paper, so I kind of tilted it like this and put my Bible just perfect. And no, I'm kidding. I got my paper out and I read through it, and he said, well, what did that say? I said, this is basically combining that God created and then God guided evolution. And he said, that's what I believe. So we started talking, what church do you go to? And he went to a church, not here in our city, but he went to a church, and here was the thing that really got me. He wasn't a young college kid. He wasn't a student. This man was in his 70s and had been in church his whole life. Very vastly different than the generations you think would buy into evolution. So we began to talk and to talk through these things. There's problems with theistic evolution. First of all, it is not a strand biblical. It's not a strand biblical. God states that he created, he spoke it, he said it. Genesis 1:1, we just went over. Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. How was it formed? God's command, so that what is seen is not made of what is visible. So what you see, it wasn't made by visible parts that he just put together. It is vastly different. For he is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn of all creation. By him all things were created, whether things in heaven, whether things in earth, whether things visible, whether things invisible. He is the creator of all things, and in him, Jesus, all things hold together. That's Colossians 1, verse 15 through 17. So theistic evolution is not a biblical thought in the least, and it also requires a very small God. Your God has to piggyback on a scientific statement. So it's not at all a biblical thought. Theistic evolution, hear me loud and clear. I don't mean to sound mean. Just want to state it as clear as I can. They are not biblical or Christian thoughts. They are opposite of that. Now, there are some thoughts and some theories that you can look and you can say, well, okay, let's move this around and let's look in these things with some aspects of the Bible, but they're not evolution. So let's look at three thoughts that have been held through by Christians throughout the times. And you could just kind of think through and say, okay. And let's get around this age of the earth thing and try to understand, how did this whole thing happen? The first thought is a thought called the gap theory. It is an unknown amount of time between Genesis 1:1 and Genesis 1:2. For in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, pause, but we don't know how long. And then the earth was formless and void, and darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God hovered over the waters. It's called the gap theory, that there's a gap between Genesis 1:1, he created, and Genesis 1:2, and then it goes on with the rest of creation. The gap in between that, they say, well, this is where you can get the age. Okay, well, the gap theory's got some problems in it. It's got some things that make sense in it, but it's got some problems in it. One of the problems is, how do you get death before you get sin? Because you got to have things dying here in this place before you have sin, which is going to be caused by Adam and Eve later on. So you've got a problem with that. What they state is that Satan fell. And when Satan fell, that messed up the earth, and so God is now recreating the earth. He's recreating the earth after Satan fell, and that's what's going to happen in Genesis 2 and following. Okay? Gap theory. It's made popular by the Scofield Reference Bible. Okay? I wouldn't go out behind the shed and fight you over it. It's not a hill to die on. It's a thought. It's a theory. This is how it breaks down in that theory. The second one is this, that there is the day-age theory. That day is poetic or relative. Therefore, it could be ages. In 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8, it says that a day is 1,000 years, and 1,000 years is like a day. So the day-age theory is saying that this day that God said, this was the first day, this was the second day, that these could be ages. This could be a time that the earth was aging, and it wasn't a literal day that was happening. Okay? So that's another view that is held. The last one, out of about 4 million that we're going to go over, we're not going over, but the last one that we have, the literal 6 days theory. In 24-hour periods, God creates with the appearance of age. This is the one that I personally believe. okay? I try to give you things of here's how some different views, and you can pick your own view. None of these are a hill to die on. Atheism and evolution, that would be a hill to die on moments. But these three here that we have, these are ones that you can look and you can say, okay, there's believers and scholars in different realms and pockets with these. The literal six-day theory is 24 hours periods God creates with the appearance of age. Here's why I think this. The Hebrew word for day is a word yom, Y-O-M, yom. Okay, and it's used throughout the scriptures to distinguish a 24-day period. Then you see through this time of creation in Genesis 1, the first yom, the second yom. There was night, there was morning, there was evening, there was day. It appears to be, in my look of Genesis 1, that there is night, there is day, there is the first yom, there is the second yom. Adam and Eve, secondly, were created as adults. It's not baby Eve and baby Adam. They're created as adults. The trees are not saplings. They have fruit. The garden is a garden, not dirt with, you know, rows. It's a garden. It appears to have age with it in the creation story. The animals are created as animals. The birds are flying. They're not in the nest getting just food from their mother type of thing. So 24, literal 24-hour period, God could have created it, in my view, and I hope yours, in a nanosecond he could have done it. He took a long time by taking 6 days. But to be able to state and to say he can declare it, I believe that, and I hope you believe that as well. So that would be the view that I would hold, that he created with the appearance of age. Now, we're going to have a cataclysmic flood as well. And floods do havoc on geological stratas and fossil things. So we're going to have a lot of that coming later on. Now, the bottom three that I gave you are ones that you can hold, and I think you can reasonably stay within the realms of orthodoxy and Christianity. The other two, you're off the ranch, okay? And you got to check your Bible, and that's why the other two result in people jettison the faith. That's why they result in those things of leaving the faith and saying, no, I don't believe in God anymore. So in thinking through all of those things, I gave you some blanks to fill out. And we're going to get to a lot more stuff, but as we get to it, you're not going to have any more blanks to fill out because I know you're going to hit overload a little bit. But as we look at these things, we can ask the question, how old is the earth? Let me give you the answer. You ready? We're going to get it. Nobody knows. Nobody knows. And so when they say it on TV and it's got a little National Geographic logo and there's music behind it and they declare 4 billion years, it sounds real convincing, doesn't it? Because we know you should believe everything you see on TV. TV is reality. If it can cut a penny, that knife can cut a penny. But then you order it and it can't cut butter. So am I saying that science is wrong? No, I'm not saying science is wrong. Am I saying that everything that we hear we should believe? No, we should not. It ought to say at the bottom, brought to you by those who also stated the world was flat for a few centuries. There are times in science discoveries are made and they state them as fact and then something else is discovered and science never goes back and says we were wrong. We just say we've discovered more information and that's not our theory any longer. And we just keep on moving with it further and further. Had a 7-year-old little boy ask me this week. He said, what was it like? I mean, before God created all that, what was the earth like? What was it like? And I said, you know what? Nobody knows. And he goes, well, God does. And I said, what is this, stump the pastor 7-year-old day? I know that. I understand that. And I didn't, you know, I was nicer than that. I didn't yell at a 7-year-old. I just went, well, you're right. That's right. And he goes, God knows. And when I get to heaven, I'm going to ask him. But when I get there, out of the mouths of babes, but when I get there, I won't really care anymore. The Word of God's purpose is not to tell you how the heavens go, it's to tell you how to go to heaven. And so is there a God? Is there a place where we can look and say, this thing, there's some design, there's some creation. No one knows how old this earth is. I wasn't there, you weren't there. We get some of these biblical thoughts. There was a man named Archbishop James Usher. In the 17th century, he was a Catholic archbishop, and he went through and he looked at all the genealogies in the Bible to try to figure out how old life was. Usually when you look through it biblically, you end up with about 4,000 to 6,000 years. Some folks will jump it out to 10,000 years. The genealogies have gaps in them. We make assumptions as believers in religion and we step out in faith. But science also makes assumptions. This rock aged just like it aged for the last 100 years. We assume that that happened for a billion years. This tree will stand for 75 years. Not if Ike comes through, it won't. There's uniformity that science assumes that it goes back all the way through, but nobody was there and nobody knows. So if somebody asks you, how old's the earth? Say this, you know what? Nobody knows. But I do know this, there seems to be design to it. And then they'll say, well, tell me something about design. And you'll say, I'm glad I listened to Pastor Greg's next point. Creation, does it have an element of design or is it chance? Is creation by design or by chance? When you look at Mount Rushmore, is there something in you that says there must have been an artist? Is there design that appears to be from that mountain versus another mountain? There appears to be design. So let's look now at some of the aspects. I want to just give you some aspects of design. What we're going to do is do what we all love doing. We're going to be kind of some scientists, some mystery people to look at something and then try to find the facts. People loved doing that in the late 1800s, and that's why a man named Sherlock Holmes was so popular. And then I remember in the 70s, a guy named Jack Klugman. Do you remember Quincy, M-E, that show? And you'd watch Quincy, and he'd get a little bone and go, well, and that's how it happened. And then Matlock in his gray suit would step up, and he'd say, here's the facts, and here it goes. And boom, it would happen, and there it would have it. Now we've got CSI, crime scene investigation, CSI, plane, CSI, Miami, CSI, Las Vegas, CSI, New York. It's going to be CSI, Hearn, if they keep selling these things like they are. They don't care. They just want to watch, smell, sell some more commercials. So we're going to be CSI for a moment, and we're going to look at it, and we're going to say, is this design or is this chance? So if you'll hang with me for the next 10 minutes, you're not going to have to fill out any more blanks. I'm giving you something you can just put in your Bible. You can follow along and be able to look at this. Is there design or is there chance? Sir James John said it like this. He was a famous mathematician, and he says, the universe seems to be created by a pure mathematician. Now let's look and let's see and ask a couple questions. My first question is this. How did nothing become something? How did nothing become something? That's the question we've got to ask. At one point, there's nothing. How did it become something? The universe is expanding. We've heard of the Hubble telescope. And the Hubble telescope is named after a man that actually lived. In 1929, a man named Professor Hubble, I guess, or Dr. Hubble, whatever, some big title, he looked through his telescope and he saw that the galaxies had more red in them than they should and that they were expanding and going out. In going out, he said, there must be a point of singularity is what they said, a point that it all began, and so then began the Big Bang Theory. Not that God created and it's going out. Not that it's Psalms 19 verse 1 that the heavens declare his glory. That's why the universe is expanding, because you can never get enough to say it's God's glory. And so in this, he stated this, but you've got to have at the beginning, there's got to be cause and there's got to be material. How did the material get there? How did the cause happen? Does disorder bring order? Does an explosion in a warehouse make a computer? How does it get order and complexity as it goes out? You need material and you need cause. The cause has to be greater than the effect. And the materials have to be put together in a way that they could go out from God speaking it and putting it together and allow creation to happen. So how does nothing become something? Hebrews 11:3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's hand, that what is seen was not made out of what was seen. Number two, how does something become life? Okay, so we got something. How does a rock become a cell? How does mud become living? How do you end up with something that's inorganic becomes organic? How does something dead become something alive? If that can happen, get in the laboratory and let's do it again. But it can't happen because you have to have certain requirements for life. Let me give you seven quickly requirements for life. And let's ask the question, design or chance? Did this just happen? Or is this true in a design? Number one, changes in gravitational force by only one part in 10 to the 40th would preclude the existence of stars, including our sun, making life impossible. Basically, there's gravitational forces that are pulling within our solar system and our universe. And those pulls, if you changed it one increment out of 10 to the 40th, now let me bring you back to speed on your math. 10 to the 40th is 10 with 40 zeros behind it. You change it, not one 10, one increment out of 10 with 40 zeros behind it, and you have no sun, you have no stars, you have no life. Let's look and see what 10 with 40 zeros looks like. There's 10. That's 10 with 40 zeros. You change one increment, you do not have a sun. Design or chance? One little increment. The slant of the earth. The earth is slanted at 23 degrees. You've seen it on a globe. There's a slant of 23 degrees. Not 13, not 33, 23 degrees. Because God loves Michael Jordan. If it was not tilted like that, then you would have great problems because the vapors from the oceans would move north and south and ice would be on all of the continents. The tilt of the earth, the gravitational pull, two things, is there design or is there chance? The sun, 93 million miles away, 11,500 degrees Fahrenheit on its surface. Now, I don't know who measured it, what scientists went there with a thermometer and figured out what that is, but we'll take their word for it. 11,500 degrees on the sun's surface. And in this sun's surface of all this heat, it hits the earth. If it hit the earth at 50 degrees more, or 50 degrees less, life would cease. Think of your yard just with this summer being about 5 degrees too much. If it hit 50 degrees more, 50 degrees less, what would happen? If you changed 11,500 degrees by 50 degrees, follow me on this, that is a change of 0.4%. Very little change. That is the same as, I have $100 in ones here, $100. This $100 in ones, if you change it by the same amount that you would have to change the degrees, you'd be changing it by 40 cents. 11,500 degrees changed by 50 degrees is the same as 40 cents to $100. The earth's rotation, the earth's not only going around the sun, tilted around the sun, the perfect distance from the sun, with the perfect gravitational pull, it is also rotating at 1,000 miles an hour. If you slowed it by 100, we would freeze up or we would burn up. It'd be like a rotisserie chicken that you're not turning on the right time. It just would freeze up or it would burn up. The earth's crust is thinner than an apple's skin in relation, but if you were to add 10 feet to the earth's crust, the crust in relation is as thin as an apple skin. If you were to add 10 feet to an apple skin, or excuse me, to the earth of its crust, and you were to take that and to add that on there, you would oxidize all the oxygen and it would take it out. And the relationship of the crust to the earth is the same as the skin of an apple to the apple. Wow. Man, we got lucky. I mean, I'm serious. This is good luck. And we haven't even talked about the human eye, as we will next week. We haven't talked about your heart and your soul and love and emotion and all of those things. The earth's crust, the earth's elliptical orbit. So we're spinning with the right crust, at the right slant, with the right gravity, at the right distance of the sun. The earth's elliptical orbit is 64,800 miles per hour. If you were to slow it by a third, we would burn up. The moon is 240,000 miles away. If it was just a fifth closer, the tides would crash on the continents twice a day. Wow! Is there design or is it all chance? And I'm telling you, I could give you a list as long as your arms of more and more things. Can I tell you exactly how old the earth is? I cannot. Can I tell you that it takes more faith to believe that it evolved than it does to create? Yes, I can. I do not have enough faith to be an atheist. I just don't. You take steps of faith in religion? Yes, no question. Without faith, it's impossible to please God. You take steps of faith in evolution? Yes. And I submit to you that the step of faith of evolution is more than the step of faith of religion. the head astronomer and founder and former director of NASA's Goddard Institute for Space Studies, said this: "For the scientist who has lived his faith in the power of reason, the story ends like a bad dream. He has scaled the mountains of ignorance and is about to conquer the highest peak. And as he pulls himself over the final rock, a band of theologians who have been sitting there for centuries is there to greet him." Setting the stage, getting it all ready, the creation for the heart. The God who creates is also the God who fills. The God who creates doesn't ask you to check your mind at the door. You can think these things through, and you can look scientifically, and science and religion have more often gone together than they have gone apart. So we look with our views of God into religion, or excuse me, into creation, and to be able to see God created these things. And I want you to hear this and we'll close. If God can create with such precision all of the things that we've spoken about, God can handle your hurts. If God can create with such precision, he can take you through the divorce that happened 20 years ago that you still have anger in. God can take you through anything, because he's truly got the whole world in his hands.